It's the Kim Munson Show, analyzing the most important stories.
Socialization of transportation, education, energy, housing, and water. What it means is that government controls it through rules and regulations.
The latest in politics and world affairs.
Under this guise of bipartisanship and nonpartisanship, it's actually tapped down the truth.
Today's current opinions and ideas.
On an equal field in the battle of ideas, mistruths or misconceptions, and it is getting us into a world of hurt.
Is it freedom or is it force? Let's have a conversation.
Indeed, let's have a conversation, and welcome to the Kim Munson Show. I am Kim Munson. Be sure and check out our website. That's Kim Munson, M-O-N-S-O-N.com. You can email me at kim@kimmunson.com as well, and sign up for our weekly newsletter. A lot of great information there, our upcoming guests, our podcasts, our op-eds, and go over to Facebook and give us a like. Great show planned for you today. In studio with me is my friend, Alan Thomas. He is an author. He's a millennial. I love getting your millennial perspective on things. You've written an excellent op-ed, When the Mob Joins the Party, and this will be on the website later today. It's great to have you here.
It's another beautiful morning. Thanks for having me.
It is gorgeous here. We've got a great view. God is showing off this morning.
Oh, he really is. And I mean, great view of the mountains and the Star-Spangled Banner in the morning. Looking at that doesn't get much better, does it?
We are blessed people. Even with all the craziness, Alan Thomas, we are blessed people. In the second segment, we'll be talking with Roger Hayes. He is a new partner of the Kim Munson Show. He is the owner of Premier Employment Services, and they provide HR kind of back office services for small to mid-sized businesses. And so we want to find out what's going on in his life. And then in the third and fourth segment, Alan, we'll talk about this piece that you've done, When the Mob Joins the Party. My friends, as we look at these issues, as Rudyard Kipling says, we need to put our thinking caps on. We need to ask what and why and when and how and where and who. And we look at these issues as freedom versus force, force versus freedom. Ultimately, socialism comes down to force. And socialism, Marxism, what that ultimately comes down to is the abolition of private property, taking away private property rights, as well as taking away the individual individualization or the individual of each person, trying to put people into groups. And we see this happening big time in our society right now. So before we jump into everything, though, I always like to say thank you to this great team that I get to work with, Steve, Zach, Patty, Keith, and Charlie. Producer Steve, how are you doing on Monday morning?
You asked a question and then you answered it. How am I on a Monday morning? It's okay.
Well, I'm just so grateful for all that you guys all do, and to each of you listeners, you're each valued, you're treasured. Today, strive for excellence, take care of your heart, your soul, your mind, and your body. Since we're going to be talking about mobs later on today, I was putting in mobs, law and order, and Robert Kennedy had a quote that I thought was very, very interesting. And as you know, Robert Francis Kennedy was a former United States Attorney General. He was an American politician and lawyer who served as the 64th United States Attorney General from January 1961 to September of 1964. He was a U.S. Senator from New York from January 1965 until his assassination in June of 1968. He died at the age of 42. He said, "What has violence ever accomplished? What has it ever created? No martyr's cause has ever been stilled by an assassin's bullet. No wrongs have ever been righted by riots and civil disorders. A sniper is only a coward, not a hero. And an uncontrolled or uncontrollable mob is only the voice of madness, not the voice of the people." So, Alan, what do you think of that?
He's spot on.
I know. And we're seeing, you know, the late 60s was a very difficult time in America, in the 60s. But it's a difficult time in America right now as well. And so I thought, I'd never seen that quote. I thought that was pretty important. Steve, your comments on that?
Did you say a senator from New York?
Yeah.
Okay. I mean, I knew he was in the Senate. I just didn't know. What is it with the Democrats? They call that carpetbagging, right? Because New York was not his home state.
Massachusetts probably was.
Yeah.
So I didn't think about that.
Hillary went to New York to be a senator. And, you know, that
Everyone's she was from Arkansas.
Scratching their heads. It's like, okay, this is carpet bagging at its finest. So, okay, we see the way they do things.
Okay.
Continue. Carry on.
Continue on here. Let's go through some of these headlines here. First one, Patty has a friend that has done some pretty important data analysis on the coronavirus here in Colorado. As you know, late last week, Governor Polis put in place a mandatory face covering executive order. And he said that he was basing it on data. But here is some data analysis from one of Patty's friends. Fact one, it says, according to official data on the CDPHE, which that's the Colorado Department of Public Health and Environment, so on their coronavirus website, the first half of June, so June 1st through the 15th, saw 114 deaths reported. The period July 1 through July 15th saw only 41 deaths reported, a decline of 64%. Fact number two, while testing increased over 250% from June to July, from 4,481 cases on June 15th to 10,956 cases on July 15th, with identical 5% positive test results on both dates, cases increased only 16% over that 30-day period. Okay, so testing increased 250%, and the cases only increased 16%. Fact number three, while hospitalizations have increased slightly in July compared to the last week of June, the new cases are among a younger population with a much lower susceptibility to serious illness, resulting in a much lower mortality rates among persons hospitalized. Despite these positive trends in the numbers that really count as measures of the pandemic's threat to public health, the experts at the State Health Department persuaded Governor Polis that the mild uptick in cases warrants more government mandates on Coloradans' use of face masks and labeling the dissenters as, I don't know if I can say that word, Steve.
You can.
I can. Okay, Governor Polis is labeling dissenters as selfish bastards.
Yeah, you're directly quoting him, so sure.
Okay. Want to make sure we stay on the air. So, Alan, what do you think about that?
You know, throughout all this, I have an engineering background, and statistics can always be a tricky thing, and correlation and causation, and it's all about how you report it and how you look at the numbers. Mm-hmm. And this is an excellent point that you can report summation totals like the state likes to do, or you can mm-hmm. actually look at changes and trends and see what's actually going mm-hmm. on. So we always need to be looking at the numbers mm-hmm. behind what people are reporting. So
right. And when you hear the word expert, scientist says, we're going back to what Rudyard Kipling says, put on your thinking cap, ask what, why, when, how are they reporting these numbers? You know, where, who, those are all really important questions to ask. So next thing, this is from Denver, CBS Local, I think it is. It says, after dire budget warnings, state agencies handed out double-digit raises. It was a CBS 4 investigation learned an array of state agencies handed out generous pay raises and hired six-figure workers weeks, sometimes months, after state budget analysts issued dire warnings about a dramatic downturn for the state's budget due to the coronavirus pandemic. It came after hundreds of thousands of Coloradans have lost their jobs and after financial markets took some of the largest financial dives in history. Kim Bimestifer.
I'm sorry, that's Bimestifer.
Is it?
Yeah, that's Pennsylvania Dutch name.
Oh, okay. Okay, so I'm going to say Kim, and then what's the name again?
Bimestifer.
Okay. Executive Director of Colorado's Health Care Policy and Financing Agency handed out pay raises to her executive staff in April and May after it became clear the pandemic would severely impact the state's budget. U.S. financial markets suffered from some of their worst losses in history during February and March. Then on March 16th, state budget analysts wrote dark financial days lay ahead for the state budget. With a significant downside risk, a near-term contraction is certain could lead to a prolonged and severe pullback in economic activity. So records obtained show that she hired a strategist for $108,000 per year on June 1. At the Colorado Energy Office, on April 1, the Director of Utility Policy was given a promotion and a salary bump from $100,000 to $108,000. The Department of Regulatory Agencies gave one six-figure executive a 12% pay increase in April, bringing his salary to $112,000. And another employee received a 6% pay increase, bringing her annual salary to $101,000. The CBS 4 investigation found at the Colorado Department of Transportation, in the month of May, one employee was promoted and received a 23% pay raise to $105,000, and another employee was promoted to deputy comptroller and received a 15% pay increase, bringing their salary to $115,000. Although Colorado's 40,000 state workers are currently not facing furloughs, as has occurred in cities around Colorado, state agencies have been ordered to cut millions of dollars from their operating budgets. So, Steve, the thing about this is public policy has caused many people to lose their jobs. It looks like that actually the state government has been giving raises out. This seems to me that it doesn't even have any compassion to what is happening to everyday hardworking people, Steve.
How do you defend this type of elitism? I don't get it. I just don't get it. I would love to get Ms. Bemisterfer on the phone and defend this at this time. At the time that we're in.
We probably should invite her. So make a note on that. We'll do that. So we're going to go to break. Before we do that, as you know, Hooters Restaurants is one of my valued partners. They have five Colorado locations: Loveland, Westminster, Aurora, Lone Tree, and Colorado Springs. They're open for dine-in, to-go, delivery, and curbside service. Happy hour at Hooters is from 3 to 6 p.m. They have half-off select appetizers. And Wednesdays are Wings Day. And actually, Patty and I went over... Oh, gosh, I think it was Saturday evening and just had a great beverage and some great nachos and just enjoyed. There were some sports. I think that it was actually probably reruns on the TVs, but we're going to start to have some sports here very, very soon. So Hooters is the place to go watch these games as we start to get back into these arenas and these ball fields. We're going to go to break. When we come back, we'll be talking with Roger Hayes. He is the owner of Premier Employer Services. Stay tuned.
Recently, rates in the mortgage market have hit near record lows. Lorne Levy with Polygon Financial notes that the COVID-19 Wuhan virus disruption has created potential opportunities to refinance your mortgage that could save you thousands of dollars. And for those senior listeners who may be looking for another source of income, exploring a reverse mortgage with Lorne Levy may be a solution. With over 17 years in the mortgage industry, Lorne Levy has the experience to answer your questions. Call Lorne Levy at 303-880-8881. That's 303-880-8881 for a mortgage checkup today.
All of Kim's sponsors are an inclusive partnership with Kim and are not affiliated with or in partnership with KLZ or Crawford Broadcasting. If you would like to support the work of the Kim Munson Show and grow your business, contact Kim at her website, kimmunson.com. That's Kim Munson, MONSON.com.
Welcome back to the Kim Munson Show. I am Kim Munson. Be sure and check out our website. That is Kim Munson, MONSON.com. Sign up for our weekly newsletter there. You can email me at kim@kimmunson.com as well. And go over to Facebook and give us a like. We greatly appreciate that. On the line with me is Roger Hayes. He is a new partner of the Kim Munson Show, which we really appreciate. And he is the owner of Premier Employer Services. Roger Hayes, welcome to the show.
Thanks, Kim. It is an absolute pleasure to be here this morning.
Well, what is going on in your world? And I guess let's begin with, explain to our listeners what you do exactly, Roger.
Thanks, Kim. I own what is called a professional employer organization. So we're basically a human resource outsourcing company where small to mid-sized businesses will contract with us. And we handle their payroll, direct deposit for all their employees. We provide benefits, so health insurance, dental, vision. Kind of like on a similar platform that a large employer, somebody that has, let's say, 500 to 1,000 employees. We provide those kind of benefits, retirement plans, 401k for their employees. We do workers' compensation, risk management, and all the HR functions. So handbooks, job descriptions, we help guide them with compliance, which is a major issue during the whole coronavirus issue. So we do a lot of different things. Basically, you know, we like to refer ourselves as the HR department for small, mid-sized businesses that can't afford to have their own HR department.
Well, and Roger, for small to mid-sized businesses, just to, you mentioned the word compliance, you know, all the rules and the regulations, and they're changing all of the time. And so to have somebody to help them with that is probably really, it's really a good thing.
In this environment that we're in right now with, as you said, compliance changing almost on a daily basis, new rules being created literally out of thin air. It's a very important issue, and what our company does is we provide that large corporate scale at a fraction of the cost that, you know, an employer would have to go out and hire somebody, pay taxes, provide benefits for them. We do it at a significantly lower cost, and we're able to provide more service than they would probably get if they hired somebody internally.
Okay. So what is going on in the small to mid-sized business world right now? You know, we've gone through unprecedented events since this whole coronavirus thing. So what are you seeing as you're out there talking to businesses?
Well, we've had a ton of stuff happen this year. It's been a pretty wild ride, especially here in Colorado. You know, our legislature started off in January with a pretty anti-business feeling to it. We knew it was going to be a real ugly session. We knew that there was going to be a number of bills introduced that were really not very business friendly. Then the coronavirus thing kicked in. So we've had all of those regulations and rules, you know, start. And that continues. As you know, Governor Polis just recently did a mask mandate. So businesses are now complying with that as well. And so there's been an enormous amount of stuff. It was a pretty rough ride. I will say one thing about coronavirus, though. It did kind of help protect businesses from some things, because our legislature shut down a little early and then came back, and they were in a sprint there in June to try to get things done. A number of things that were probably going to be pretty devastating ended up not happening to us. So there was actually a little bit of a silver lining with the whole coronavirus issue.
Right. There were some bills out there that would really make it difficult. I can't figure it out, Roger. How is it that the Colorado State Legislature doesn't understand that small to mid-sized businesses are really the engine that keeps, you know, a state going? It's businesses going out there and creating their business and giving people jobs. And I can't quite understand why the Colorado legislature that is currently elected, and I guess we are going to have an election this November, so we need to remember that. But I don't understand. Do they not understand economics? I don't get it.
To be polite, some of them, I don't think, grasp it. However, there's others that understand it. But our legislature, as you know, our entire state government's dominated by the Democratic Party right now. And under years past, we've had the same scenario. You know, under Governor Hickenlooper, there were, you know, both houses of the legislature were dominated by the Democrats. And it wasn't a major deal. A lot of them understood business. We've got a lot of really good Democrats in the legislature that understand business very well, like Senator Angela Williams, for example. They understand economics, they understand how important small business are. But there's a core group of folks that are convinced that small business are very wealthy, and any business owner is rich. Therefore, they need to pay, as you've heard many times over the last number of years, they need to pay their fair share, and that's where they need to go to get all their money. It's hard to raise taxes on everyone. They don't believe that they should raise taxes on a lot of people. So they go after businesses. And it's really a very frustrating thing, because you're 100% correct. The small business is the engine here in the United States that really creates a lot of everything. That's where a lot of jobs and a lot of revenue come from. Without them, we're kind of doomed.
Roger, I've been thinking a lot about this. A week or so ago, I did a podcast with Stephen Kessler. He's a young conservative. He's a Russell Kirk fellow, or an Edmund Burke fellow at the Russell Kirk Institute. And he said something, and I think I knew this, but it hadn't really registered with me, because we talk about freedom versus force, force versus freedom. And socialism ultimately comes down to force. And what he mentioned about socialism slash Marxism is taking away the individualization, or the, you know, the individual, instead of, and then putting people into groups. But the other thing is the abolition of private property. And one of the ways that you can abolish people's private property is through excessive taxation. And it's much more subtle than, you know, it used to be where, you know, guys came in on horses and with, you know, guns and took people's stuff. This is much more subtle, but it takes private property as well, Roger.
That's very true. You know, not that, you know, what we do for a living, and we don't get into the politics and stuff, but we have to deal with it at the Capitol. And as I mentioned, there's that core group of legislators, both in the House and Senate. They're very vocal, and they're very powerful. And they strongly believe that, you know, the state should really dominate as far as business is concerned. Most businesses should be in the hands of the state. The state needs to determine what's best for the individuals. And there's a number of ways they're doing that. You saw that, I think, during the coronavirus issue with the, there was a restaurant down in Castle Rock, and they went after that guy because he opened up early. And, you know, I've never heard, I've never heard that there was a single coronavirus case tied to his, you know, opening early. Yet they really attempted to control and shut him down. You know, literally they were going to completely close him down. There was another a winery over in Centennial that went through the same thing. How dare you step outside the box? We'll punish you. And by doing that, we'll literally take your business away from you.
Well, and I...
It is scary.
It is. I actually read Governor Polis's executive order regarding this mask mandate. And it actually says that they, first of all, on the individual, that there would be possible civil or criminal penalties. But then on the business owner, the order actually says that if, in fact, they're not enforcing the mask mandate, that that their licenses, their business licenses, might be taken away. I find that rather shocking, Roger.
Well, it is, and as a business owner, it's very scary because you make a business decision, and all of a sudden they pull any of your licensing. If you're a bar, a restaurant, you know, they'll take your liquor license away from you, and without that, it's pretty tough to continue to do business for a lot of folks. And it's a very powerful tool that they can use to control you and to get you to do exactly what they want. And so that's, you know, one of the things we've been dealing with since March is a lot of this compliance stuff is businesses don't really know what's going on because it's happening so fast and things are changing so often. Mm-hmm. It wasn't too long ago we were told that masks don't work and that you didn't have to wear them or you shouldn't even wear them. And then all of a sudden, a couple of days later, you turn around and it's an absolute mandate. And if you don't, they could potentially just come in and either toss you into jail as an individual or shut down your business if you're a business owner. And it's scary stuff for businesses right now. There's a lot out there that, you know, really is complicated and very confusing.
Well, and that's why your services are super helpful for small to mid-sized businesses. So, Roger Hayes, how can people reach you?
We've got a website, obviously. Everybody does, www.premieremployerservices.com. And there is a page there that you can fill out to let us know that you're interested in having a conversation. You can always call us at our main number, 303-221-0558. And honestly, anybody can email me whenever they like. It's rhayes, H-A-Y-S, at premieremployerservices.com.
Well, Roger, it's great to talk with you this morning, and I'm really excited that you're one of our new partners as well. So thank you.
I am too, Kim. Thank you so much for the opportunity. It's been a pleasure this morning.
Okay. You have a great day, and we'll talk to you,
you
soon.
Too. Take care. Bye-bye.
Okay. And Jason McBride, Presidential Wealth Management, another one of my valued partners. How are you doing on Monday morning?
Oh, well, I'm bright-eyed and bushy-tailed, Kim.
Well, good. I'm glad to hear that on a Monday morning. So what is going on in the investment world?
Well, it's interesting. We had a pretty quiet Friday where the indexes didn't do a lot. And the NASDAQ, which is stuffed with tech stocks and has kind of been on really almost a straight moonshot up since we hit the bottom in March. It's taken a little bit of a pause here. If you go all the way back to about the 6th of July, which is 10 trading days, Kim, it really hasn't done much. I mean, it went up a little, down a little, but it looks like the NASDAQ is kind of consolidating or going sideways or digesting its gains, as the experts like to say. When you look at the S&P, it's actually trying to make progress here, slightly upwards, kind of on declining volume, but I'm watching about the 32-35 level on the S&P really closely. If it can bust above that, Kim, with some good punch, it looks like it's been consolidating going all the way back to early June, and now some of your value stocks and kind of non-techs have been moving along a little better over the last couple of weeks while the techs are taking a rest.
Okay. Well, you know, Jason, you mentioned back in March, there is always opportunity. I remember back then, I had a big knot in my stomach because we didn't know what was going to happen. But at that particular point in time, you know, there was opportunity. Now that there's, as you mentioned, there's been a bit of a moonshot on the NASDAQ. Sometimes it's good to maybe lighten up and, you know, raise some cash. I mean, there's different things to do. It's different for each person. But you and the good men and women over there at Presidential Wealth Management can sit down with people and do a portfolio checkup. And there's always opportunity, Jason McBride.
Well, you know, and sometimes the opportunity is just, like you say, Kim, take a look at things, be able to maybe just stay just as you are. Maybe just a second set of eyes that says, hey, everything looks pretty okay here. Is it okay with you? Do you know what your risk is on this? Well, most people probably do. After what happened just recently, they've got a pretty good idea of what their risk tolerance is, but they're not operating under a panic mode. So it actually is a really good time to take a look and see if you want to make changes, because you're not doing it from a panic position. That panic's fresh in your mind, but it's kind of gone now. Plus, you probably got most of your money back. What a perfect storm.
Yes, most definitely. And it's always good to do things when you make decisions when you're in a position of strength. So, Jason McBride, the phone number over there is 303-694-1600, 303-694-1600. Natalie will be at the switchboards at 7:30, and then we've got this great landing page together, AIR, that's AIRpresidential.com, AIRpresidential.com. Jason, good to talk to you. We'll talk to you tomorrow morning.
Have a great week, Kim.
Thanks so much. And we're going to go to break. When we come back, Alan Thomas, my friend, he is an author, and we're going to be talking about his piece, When the Mob Joins the Party. It is an op-ed. It'll be on my website a little bit later today, and you won't want to miss it, so stay tuned.
Karen Levine has over 30 years in the real estate industry. The reaction to the COVID-19 Wuhan virus is presenting unprecedented and unpredictable opportunities and challenges in buying or selling your home. That is why you need to work with award-winning realtor Karen Levine. Karen Levine comes highly recommended by Kim Munson. Call award-winning realtor Karen Levine today at 303-877-7516. Karen's expertise will help guide you through this crazy real estate market. Call Karen Levine at 303-877-7516 today.
You'd like to get in touch with one of Kim Munson's sponsors, but you can't recall their phone number. Find a full list of advertising partners on Kim's website, kimmunson.com. That's Kim, MONSON.com.
Welcome back to the Kim Munson Show. I am Kim Munson. Be sure and check out our website. That's Kim Munson, MONSON.com. Sign up for our weekly newsletter there. And you can email me at kim@kimmunson.com as well, and go over to Facebook and give us a like. In studio today is with me is my friend Alan Thomas, and you have such thoughtful op-eds. That one that you did last month on qualified immunity was really interesting. People can find that at my website. This one, when the mob joins the party. So what precipitated your thoughts on this, Alan Thomas?
So the more I've learned about and read and studied the Federalist Papers, the more I've learned that the Founding Fathers were just so incredibly intelligent and learned. And their foundational knowledge on the human nature and human character is really astounding. And one of the things they studied a lot of was classical Greek thinking on this. And then they also studied a lot of governments and what precipitated the failing and the fall of democratic governments. And typically they found it was the people ruined their own democratic governments, which is why they came up with this revolutionary new form of government to kind of protect themselves from the mob. They spent a lot of time in the Federalist Papers discussing this very unique human nature and human tendency to fall prey to passions versus what they considered a more noble and more authoritative part of the soul, which is reason. And they knew human nature. They knew mobs were going to enter into the public discourse if they had a democratic form of government. And they really crafted everything they could do to mitigate the effects of that.
And so the mob, so we talk about that America is a democracy. And it's not really. It is a democratic constitutional republic, correct? Is that the, would you say that's the right definition?
Right. Yeah. They, obviously, the Republican part of that is where your democracy enters in. We have elections, we have our elected representatives, but they wanted to protect our rights by creating the Constitution, saying no matter who's in the majority, there are certain things you cannot do. And no matter how many people want to violate these natural rights, we're going to protect those. We're going to make sure that those are always going to be protected from a mob who may want to take it away, such as what we're seeing a lot lately in Seattle, where they created this CHOP or CHAZ zone, and the government basically said, well, we're not going to do anything. And they didn't protect all the citizens who didn't want to be a part of that or who owned property within that. The Founding Fathers would say that's not a government. That's not a government that's a part of America, at least, because we wrote this Constitution that said the government needs to protect your right to life, liberty, and pursuit of happiness. You have your property. You need to be able to live your life free from the impulses of a crowd of people who want to, what, put up borders and barricades and call it their own land? It's kind of madness. And the Founding Fathers knew that something like that could happen, which is why they created the form of government they did.
So the form of government that we have, this constitutional republic, mobs ultimately, I think that people used to think that money was the thing that really drove people. But more than money, it's power. And a mob can have power. And so the founders thought, how can we mitigate that power? That's how we came up with the different branches of government, so that there were checks on and balances on the different the different branches of government, because power is the thing that people really want. And we see that in politics all the time.
Right. And part of what the founders knew is they set up the government as a self-governing government, right? It has its own checks and balances. And they modeled it after a self-governing individual, an individual who's able to regulate themselves. So we know when we're hungry and we're able to say, okay, I need to eat. But then there's times where maybe we're not hungry and we don't need that extra 10 slices of pizza. Mm-hmm. And we need to be able to self-regulate. And they really built it around this model of a citizen who knew how to be self-reliant, self-assertive, and really govern themselves. And that's what they really imagined the citizenry to be.
Okay, so we're in 2020 now. I mean, you've probably never seen anything quite like this in your lifetime. And we're seeing citizens that are not self-regulating. And we've moved away to socialism, ultimately. This comes down to, my understanding is that there's a victim and there's oppressor. That seems to be the narrative that's going on. And what I find so funny is back in the 60s, the protesters were saying they were protesting against the man. Well, the man now, that man that they were protesting against. They now are the man. They're the ones that are in positions of power. And they are liking that. And in fact, taking more and more power. We see that in many of these blue states with governors and also with the mayors that are taking more and more power. There's not a balance. Like all these executive orders that we're seeing from Governor Polis. There's no balance on that, Alan.
Right. And, you know, Madison saw that and he wrote extensively about that, about how the government has to be regulated by the people. That's why we have our representatives. That's why we should be able to vote them out, especially come this November. Mm-hmm. Hopefully Colorado sees that and does a lot of that. Mm-hmm. But there's also a need for the government to protect itself from the people, which is why they set it up the way they did. Because when you have this passionate mob that wants the government to change everything, to tax everybody, for everybody to pay their fair share, there needs to be a certain level of protection from the passions of those people and the passions of the mob to be able to say, for our government officials to say, no, you guys are being a little unreasonable and unjust, and we have a duty to protect the rights of our citizens. So unfortunately, we're seeing that start to break down and fail a little bit, and a lot of that is due to a lack of civic knowledge within our culture right now, and a lack of understanding, and even, you know, going back and understanding why our founding fathers set things up the way they did. Why did they value freedom and individualism so much? And to your point, when you don't value individualism, when you don't value an individual's right to live their life, all of this breaks down. Because when you believe in a greater public higher good, or so-called higher good, you don't believe in any of these principles and precepts, and so you won't be advocating for them. In fact, you're trying to be breaking them down like they're trying to do now.
You know, something that I find very interesting that is occurring, and that is these petitions, like change.org, or these different petitions to get government to do something. And I think you're right. I think it's a breakdown in civic knowledge. Because a petition to get the government to do something or to convict somebody of something takes away due process. And due process was super, super important to the founders.
Right. And you kind of have to ask with those petitions, are you advocating for government to fix itself? Do we have something wrong with the system? Kind of like we talked about last month in qualified immunity or prosecutorial immunity. Or are you actually just advocating for government to completely change? And you kind of have to ask these people, well, why don't you change the people that are in government then? Why don't you change these people that have been in, you know, especially at the federal level, who are in there for decades at a time and have done what you would say, nothing? So it begs the question of, why do you think this petition is going to do anything different if the way to change things is to change the people that you elect to represent you?
So one other thing, because that makes me think about term limits. We hear a lot about term limits. And with proper civic knowledge, the people would institute term limits without government doing that. We have, though, a situation where we have bureaucrats now. The founders, I don't think, ever really looked at the fact that we would have this administrative state, if you will. So even if we change the elected officials or the politicians, we still have embedded this whole administrative state now. And so I'm not sure, Alan, that you can have term limits and an administrative state, because we need to be able to get rid of bureaucrats. They're unelected, they're unaccountable. And the weaponizing of these local health departments and state health departments against everyday people, from people that are not elected, that's a big problem that I see, Alan.
Oh, it's a huge problem. And, you know, at the state and local level, it's a huge problem. And even at the federal level, I mean, the bureaucracy is ginormous. And like you said, I mean, Tri-County Health is the perfect example of just these unelected bureaucrats and appointed people who don't really have a method of we the people to tell them to do their job or that they're not doing their job well. They're very insulated and protected from that. And that's maybe where term limits for our elected representatives would help. We could get new thoughts, fresh ideas in, and perhaps be able to sway these politicians to think the way that we do and to influence them the way we do and to think in more free ways.
Well, and I want to go back to the first two things that we talked about during the show, and that was the data analysis that Patty's friend had done, that according to the CDPHE, the first half of June saw 114 deaths from the coronavirus, and July, the first 15 days of July saw only 41 deaths. That was a decline of 64%. Testing increased over 250%, but the cases increased only 16% over that 30-day period. And hospitalizations were up just a little bit, but not really that much. And that's, again, with all of that testing. And then on that, you know, closing down our economy, and now this forced mask mandate, and we go over to find out that the bureaucrats here in the state of Colorado, none of them had lost their jobs. And many of them had been given raises. And so I just wanted to make that point. Let's go to break. This is Kim Munson. I'm talking with Alan Thomas. He's written an excellent piece, When the Mob Joins the Party. And let's break this piece down a little bit more as we get into the last segment of the show. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
Predovich & Company understands that the COVID-19 Wuhan virus disruption has individuals and businesses scratching their heads with a variety of bookkeeping, tax planning, and accounting questions. Predovich & Company knows that you need trusted professionals to help you navigate these choppy waters. Kim Munson highly recommends Predovich & Company. Because of their advanced technological capabilities, Predovich & Company can help clients anywhere in the United States. Call Predovich & Company at 303-791-3000 to organize your personal and business finances. Call 303-791-3000 today.
Now more than ever, it is important to have independent voices bringing truth and clarity to the issues facing us, our families, our communities, our state, our nation, and our world. The Kim Munson Show is one of those important voices. Kim is a truly independent entrepreneur. She purchases her broadcast time, which gives her total freedom in production of the show and scheduling of guests. If you'd like to support The Kim Munson Show, go to her website, KimMunson.com, and click on the contribute button under Kim's picture. Kim greatly appreciates your help and support.
Welcome back to The Kim Munson Show. I am Kim Munson. Be sure and check out our website. That's KimMunson, M-O-N-S-O-N.com. You can email me there. I sign up for our weekly newsletter, and be sure and go over to Facebook and give us a like. In studio with me is my good friend, Alan Thomas. He's written an excellent piece, When the Mob Joins the Party. So the mob joins the party. What do you mean by that exactly, Alan Thomas?
So in Federalist Number 55, one of the great quotes is, if every Athenian citizen were a Socrates, every Athenian assembly would be a mob. And what the founders were kind of talking about there is there's this human nature and this group psychology that mob psychology is not affected by the character of the mob members. So what I've started to see a lot in the Republican and kind of conservative movement is we've been reacting to the passions of the left in some of these radical ideas and this mob-like tendencies. The outrage culture, right? This cancel culture. We're reacting so strongly to those passions that we're being passionate back. We're creating our own anti-mob mob where we're not using logic and reason. For instance, I've seen a lot of people that they're attacking Governor Polis's character and his personal life as opposed to his actual policies. Now, that's never going to persuade anybody. That's never going to change what people think. Now we're talking about his character. We're not talking about these mass mandates, this government overreach or what he's doing. Another example I kind of talked about in the article was about masks, which, you know, he kind of took my thunder away when he made a mandatory mask order. But prior to that, there were so many conservatives and people that were so anti-mask that they started attacking the characters of even conservatives that wore masks in public or would go to businesses that required masks. And they abandoned this premise and principle of an individual's right to choose. You know, I can choose to wear a mask or a heavy coat out in the middle of summer. If I can choose to do what I want to do. And they started attacking people because of these unconstitutional mask mandates. And I understand, and there's a lot of passion there, but we need to take a step back and we need to say, are we being dictated by logic and reason, or are we responding to the left in kind? Are we responding to them with passion back? And if that's the case, it's kind of like, you know, with kids. Why did you hit your brother? Oh, well, because he did it first. Mm-hmm. That doesn't make it any more right. And us responding with our own sort of mob mentality doesn't make our arguments any more right than theirs does.
That is such an interesting perspective. And I really am working to stay to the issues instead of to, you know, calling people names. I have been a little bit frustrated that I felt that he's been a bit dictatorial, you know, in many of these things, because there's so many executive orders. It's not honoring the way, you know, our government is set up, the balance of power and all. But instead of attacking him, I have found that what is best is to go read the executive order. Take a look at it. What does it say, so that when we have a conversation that we are informed about it? You know, there are many conservatives that may have underlying health conditions. They feel more comfortable wearing a mask. What I find is so frustrating, though, is that, like, these mask mandates and these different stores that are saying that, you know, masks, you have to have a mask, like Walmart, Costco, that, you know, people say, well, gosh, you know, businesses can actually make that decision. You know, no shirt, no shoes, no mask, no service. But this is being done under government coercion. And that's the difference that I'm not sure that people really understand. And it seems that we could have something creative, that a store could have, you know, all masks from like 8 to 11, and then anything, whatever you want to do after that. It seems like we could have some creativity on that to keep people comfortable, but hiding behind all this is government coercion, Alan.
But see, that's an interesting point, and that's kind of missed in these discussions that are so passionate, is creative thinking. I mean, that's why we believe in the free market so much, is that these business owners will be able to be creative and create things for the public that they want and need, as opposed to a government dictating, as opposed to these countywide, statewide orders that are just a one size fits all, but actually fits none, right? Why couldn't stores have been doing this? And you're right, they've been coerced and forced, as opposed to what conservatives should have been saying is exactly that. Hey, businesses, why don't you guys get creative? Why don't you guys try and figure out how to best serve me as the public? How can you serve people that believe in masks? How can you serve people that don't believe in masks, as it's your right to do? And you know what? Maybe you think, I want to protect my employees. I want to have masks. That was the funny thing about that executive order that Governor Polis sent out, when he said stores have the right to refuse service to anyone not wearing a mask. And so many people I saw exploded at that. And I was like, that's a superfluous order. Did businesses not think they already had that right? They have the right to refuse service if you don't have pink hair. They're not going to serve very many people because there's not very many people with pink hair, but they have that ability. They have that right. And we should be preaching that. We should be saying, listen, these businesses can get creative. They can do what they want and need, as opposed to being this party of no, no, no. We can be like, hey, we have so much freedom to do so much with.
Well, and so then what would happen is you could have businesses compete. You might have a business that would say, you know what, you don't have to wear masks. And people would decide maybe not to go there. There'd be another business that might say, we only want masks, and people could go there. And so the free market could figure that out. But when that happens, Alan, the politicians and the bureaucrats lose their power.
They do.
And that's what this is. To me, this is all about. This is all about power, because as we looked at the numbers that Patty's colleague put together, the numbers don't really match up with all the force that's coming, coming from the governor's office. And so letting the free market letting businesses decide would take away the PBIs, the politicians, bureaucrats, and interest parties' power. And that is what I find that this is all about. And so this, I get passionate about it because I see this as a precursor to government trying to take even more power. What's your thoughts?
It's kind of twofold. One, I agree. They're definitely trying to take power. That's always the allure of power, right? I also think some people just don't understand that that's how free markets work. They truly don't. I mean, at the very beginning of this, what did we see? We saw all of our grocery stores start to implement senior shopping. You know, that like an hour where senior citizens could come in and shop without being exposed to other people. And all that happened without the government saying, hey, you know, Kroger and King Soopers and Walmart, you need to implement this. The stores did that because they saw a need and a fear from people, and so they did it. And fear is the other part of what we're seeing in our government right now. Is how do you control a mob? Well, you get them passionate. And what's a very human, passionate emotion that gets people going? And that's fear. Mm-hmm. When people are scared, they start to think illogically and irrationally. And so if these PBIs can control the mobs by using fear, by using statistics to tell a story that's scary, and it is. The story that they tell with these statistics is scary, and I understand why people would be like, wow, this is, I might catch COVID walking out of my house. But that's how you control a mob, and that's why we need to take a step back and use and reason and logic and to really start to look at numbers and say, hey, is this the real story, and what are you guys really trying to tell us? And maybe we shouldn't be so scared. We should be logical, and we should be concerned, but we don't need to be scared. And I mean, that's the other half. They want to control the mob, and they want to stay in power by using the mob and crafting it.
Well, and another thing that I saw just yesterday, I think it was, that many of these big corporations are being, like when Walmart came out with their mask mandate, this was before Governor Polis came out with his mask mandate, I realized that there's a strategy that's going on there, that many of these people that are trying to control the mob through fear, they're going through, not now necessarily through government, but they're also going to businesses and convincing them to push forward this anti-freedom issue. And coming to say mask mandate, that is totally different than, hey, business, how can we creatively figure out how we could accommodate all of our patrons? And so we're seeing a new kind of control, I think, Alan, that is starting to develop, and that is going to the management of these companies and putting force into play in their businesses. What's your thoughts?
It's limiting groupthink, right? I mean, it's limiting people's ability to talk and discuss these issues. And the same people that are going to these management companies saying, we're going to boycott and terrorize and vandalize and steal from your stores, are the same type of people that online are just absolutely saying, well, you don't care about anybody. You want to kill your grandmother if you're not wearing a mask out in public, you know? And it's that sort of limiting dialogue which is missing from our culture right now. And we do need to watch out that we're not also doing it within our own conservative sites. Another example is Trump's policies. Right now, he does a lot of great things, but there's some things that I disagree with. But boy, if I go on a conservative website and maybe say, hey, I don't agree with X, Y, or Z that he's doing, the number of people that will come back and say, oh, you hate Trump, you're not a true conservative, you're a rhino, you're this, that, or the other. We're doing the same thing within our own group. And we need to watch out that we're not limiting the group's ability to rationalize and reason some of these issues, just as much as these people who are forcing these issues on businesses are doing the same thing.
Well, and we do. We need to have dialogues. Nobody is perfect. And so we need to have honest dialogues about, you know, different things that are coming forth. For example, when Trump put in the federal family leave program, I'm like, that's not something that I think is a great idea. But to your point, there's a lot of things that I think has been really good. And when we talk about conservatives, we're talking about conserving this idea of all men are created equal with these inalienable rights of life, liberty, and pursuit of happiness. Alan Thomas, we're out of time. It's just great having you here.
It's always great being here. Thank you, Kim.
Okay, and my friends, you can actually find Alan's op-ed. It'll be on our website a little bit later today. And our quote for today, again, is from Bobby Kennedy. He says, whenever men take the law into their own hands, the loser is the law. And when the law loses, freedom languishes. So my friends today, be grateful, read great books, think good thoughts, listen to beautiful music, communicate and listen well, live honestly and authentically, strive for high ideals, and like Superman, stand for truth, justice, and the American way. My friends, God bless you, and God bless America.